What's good, listeners? Welcome to the Chris College Show, Millennial Talk Show, Bunker Edition. Good morning, Marissa. How's it going, fam?
It is going fabulous. It's Friday. I'm excited for the weekend.
Hey, well, you already kind of sort of kicked off your weekend already. I know yesterday you got lucky to enjoy that theater experience. So what was the play that you saw?
I saw a Slave play, and it definitely, by Jeremy Harris, it's definitely a play that I do recommend people to go see. It is heavy. It is thick. It is complicated. I'm still processing.
It's got the most nominations, I believe, in history for the Tony Awards. I mean,
got 12 nominations, did not win, which I was surprised about. But I'm still talking about it and thinking. And to me, that's theater.
That's awesome.
That's where I'm walking away being like, okay, what's happening? My brain is still, I missed my exit to work this morning by 2 miles because I was thinking about the play.
Anyway. Hey, that's what's good. We always love hearing about that. And I always love when people walk into the theater realm and take away something where you're actually thinking about it in the end. I think that's what makes a play that much more special. And we always like to do this at the top of the show because on this day in 1964, Muhammad Ali, then known as Cassius Clay, became the world heavyweight boxing champion as he defeated Sonny Liston in Miami Beach. Also on this day in 1919, believe it or not, out of all the states, Oregon became the first state to tax gasoline at 1 cent per gallon. I kind of like that philosophy. Maybe we should go back in 1919 time era and bring that back in 2022.
Why don't we bring it back and not allow Oregon to tax gas?
Hey,
Oregon. Now I'm blaming you, homie. Okay.
Oh, I'm kind of just a little bit. But, you know, listen, it is what it is. But we got a great show for everybody tuning in live because our Just Talking guest is our brand new CCS video game contributor, Henrik Rivera. Also, check out our brand new podcast series, Off the Fret, featuring The Phoenix Within. More music talk. All right, Marissa, it's time to rock and roll. Our guest on Just Talking is our brand new kick-ass CCS video game contributor, Henrik Rivera, live on the Chris Collins Show, Millennial Talk Show. How's it going, fam?
Doing pretty good. Just relaxing day so far, doing this, and then got a couple more things to do, but I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, let's go now. I mean, I can already see the purple colorful vibes kicking in. We can already tell right away. I mean, at least if you're actually tuning into our YouTube channel, you will see right now that Henrik is in the realm of the video game world. I mean, come on, look at his setup. It's so kick ass. And I mean, Henrik, why do you love gaming so much?
I just think that, you know, out of all the entertainment industries that are active nowadays, gaming is the one that there really is a lot of innovation continuing to happen. And, you know, that's in comparison to like movies, they're a little stagnant sometimes, you know, they're stuck in their ways and things like that. But games, they're the ones that really take those steps to do things that haven't been done before.
I don't know about you, Henrik, but like playing video games to me is like a lot like smoking the devil's lettuce, okay? Hear me out, CCS family. I mean, it's like an escape from life, like weed. And a lot of the times, Henrik, we hear baby boomers that say, you know, gaming is for idiots and nerds who are wasting their time and have no social life. Clearly that isn't the case, right?
No, definitely not. I mean, of course, it's all about a balance. And, you know, some games will be a little bit more demanding of your time than others. But like, if you even look at a lot of celebrities nowadays, they're streaming on Twitch, playing games with their fans that are watching. Like, I was just watching Post Malone, the rapper.
Yeah.
He actually is playing Apex Legends nowadays.
Oh, that's fascinating. I would have never assumed that. And I mean, a lot of the times when I hear these kind of haters, you know, a lot of the times it's coming from baby boomers. But then again, you know, we kind of get some Gen Xers trying to get into the mix. And a lot of the times I kind of feel like they are just a bunch of haters because maybe they were neglected on Christmas Day from not waking up with the new console under the tree. Maybe that's just a thought. But, you know, I found this wild statistic, Henrik, where over 3.2 billion gamers are across the globe. I mean, that's basically a third of gamers in this world are dominating the landscape. I mean, why hasn't it that these Yankee Doodles have not caught on to the overall hype of video games?
I don't know. I just think that they think of it like you were saying earlier, is like a thing for nerds or like people who
Do
don't
you
have
get
a social
offended if
life.
someone calls you a nerd? Do you get
Me
offended?
personally, I don't. I mean, I kind of grew up always looking a little geeky, so I guess I'm used to it at this point. But yeah, I can see that a lot of people would get offended, saying or hearing from people like, "Oh, you're such a nerd for playing this game," like.
I mean, come on now. I mean, it's definitely dominating the entertainment industry, especially when you consider the fact that television, film, and theater, including the music industry, doesn't have anywhere near close to what the gaming industry is capturing today. And that leads me to the next topic that I want to bring up with you, Henrik, is because with Tom Holland's Uncharted movie finally here, Fallout is getting a TV series on Amazon, and Netflix is developing Cyberpunk 2077 anime, a Tomb Raider anime, and now a BioShock movie. And the 2000s brought cringy video game adaptions to the big screen. And why are video game movies so horrible?
So I think they're trying to translate the medium to their medium, but they're not doing it correctly in the sense of like when you're playing a game, as we were talking about earlier, you are in control. So you're kind of crafting your experience that you're having with the game, whereas with a movie, they have to craft an experience for you to just watch. That doesn't always work. As we've seen, there's plenty of video game movie adaptations that didn't really work.
Absolutely. I mean, it's funny that you say that because this was my first reaction. I started going down, the 2000s video game adaptions. I kept thinking about Tomb Raider, and we think about Resident Evil back in 2002. We got Doom with Dwayne The Rock Johnson. But it always seems like movies that are best for video games are the ones about playing video games. I mean, the ones that I'm thinking about right now are Free Guy, Jumanji, the remake, or let's say Wreck-It Ralph. So do you think it's because it's not tied to a specific story?
Yeah, probably that is part of it, at least, because there's a certain expectation that people will have going into a movie, like going into Uncharted or BioShock, any of those. They're gonna have a certain expectation of that franchise. Whereas, with a movie like Free Guy, anything can happen. They're like it's a whole frontier of
Right,
possibilities,
especially,
honestly.
right. I mean, especially when Ryan Reynolds is playing an NPC called Guy. So, like, it's kind of like endless possibilities. But, Henrik, in your latest IG reel, you made a call in to hear from others about what they think about video game adaptions. And on Instagram, at Maza Panzon, he wrote an amazing comment, which I want to read out loud. And that said, "Okay, the new Resident Evil movie flopped, but it was fucking campy perfection." And yeah, I mean, you could view it that way, but is that really what we want from our beloved video games? What's your take?
So first off, I mean, it's a fair point. Resident Evil is a horror franchise first and foremost, and horror and camp. I'm a horror fan myself, and I will say that horror and camp, they go hand in hand. Like that is just like a marriage made in heaven. But I will say that when you think of Resident Evil, you don't necessarily think of like campy action. Well, I mean, there's some action, but like comparing to like the new Resident Evil games that have been coming out, like 7 and 8, Seven specifically reminded me a lot about Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like that whole franchise. And I think if they had gone that route, they actually could hold a candle to that franchise because there's a lot of potential there. And I'm saying, if they had just like basically recreated the game as as a movie, basically.
No, I mean, because like when I read that response, it was like, why suffer watching a campy video game when you could just go cosplay at Comic-Con? I mean, that's exactly what it looks like. And I feel like with these high, big budget video game adaptions nowadays, I think, at least that's what I feel from millennials, we expect more. And like, I don't know about you, Henrik. I mean, my gripe with video game adaptions is they don't stick to the script when the story is already written. And two, the depiction of characters drives me up a wall. I mean, especially when I think about how insane it is that Mark Wahlberg is playing Sully today in Uncharted. I mean, aren't you frustrated as a gamer?
No, definitely. It is frustrating because, you look at these mediums trying to translate video games, which have so much potential in their source material to be great, amazing even, like box office hits. And actually most of the work is even done for them, because when you look at so many games that are coming out nowadays with like the full-fledged stories, they've done all the cinematic work. You just need to make it a movie at that point.
But I had another thought on this, and I kind of feel like, none of the 48 video game adaptions that have been released today have an Oscar-winning director attached to the project. Would this revive the cinematic landscape if that was the case?
It could be the case, but at the same time, I would have to say, coming from a perspective of a fan to a lot of these franchises, the director would definitely have to understand what they're getting into.
Yeah, that's actually true. I mean, you can get David Finch, you can get people like Christopher Nolan, and if they're not heavily invested in the video game series or even played it, matter of fact, it's kind of hard for them to actually, quote unquote, stick to the script, stick to the story. And Henrik, as an avid gamer, I know you're aware of the toxic debate amongst online gamers who can't go at least a week without talking about NFTs. And will NFTs find its place in video games? And if so, how would it realistically work?
So the ways that I've seen it being touted as is kind of like, oh, we can sell you this cosmetic, and then there's like limited numbers of it, so you better buy it. It's like
Yeah, right.
kind of introducing this artificial scarcity, and people have tons of FOMO when it comes to cosmetics and games,
So what do you mean by FOMO? That's a term I'm not too familiar with, and I'm sure the CCS family's not
so
as well.
it's the fear of missing out. So like
Ah.
when a really cool skin comes out on a game that you like playing, a lot of times it'll be limited availability in terms of it's only available for this couple weeks, and then after that it's gone forever. So
Gotcha. It's
it's
kind of
like,
similar to like the Fortnite store, I mean,
yeah.
occasionally they'll bring it back after a couple months or maybe even a year.
Exactly.
But do you feel like it's innovation or a cash grab?
Me personally, I think it's a bit of a cash grab. It's like another way for these companies to have another way to milk all their customers, once again feeding on that FOMO, because
Yeah,
microtransactions do that already.
right. No, I think that's so true. And for like a lot of the Yankee Doodles that are tuning in, and possibly, millennials and Gen Z who have no idea still to this day what an NFT is, what's the difference between an NFT and a microtransaction?
So a microtransaction, it's basically you pull out your wallet and you say, all right, I'm going to pay you guys this money. You give me some in-game currency and I buy something. An NFT in comparison is pretty similar. There are a lot of possibilities, and we don't have to necessarily get into all the possibilities, but
Right.
basically you have a sense of ownership, basically saying like, okay, I own this. And I don't have to rely necessarily on the game company to say that I own it in the game. But then going again into the whole like sense of scarcity thing,
Yeah.
NFTs in gaming is kind of like, all right, we're gonna make like say 10 of these, and they're all gonna be slightly different. You can go buy your own, and it's gonna be only you who owns it.
Yeah, I mean, I just find such a hard time thinking how this is gonna work because I know Ubisoft is the only game publisher that has tried out in-game NFTs with Ghost Recon Breakpoint last year. And do you anticipate more AAA publishers getting involved? Because like even how you explained that just now, it makes me kind of question. It's like, how does NFT play a role in gaming today?
No, I think I will see probably in the future a lot of studios at least dabbling into the idea of it. But also when you look at all the fan reactions to all this, like they hate it. Like a majority of gamers do
Right.
not like it, because it really just seems like they're just trying to grab more money from us. And like, I don't appreciate that. I don't know about you, but I don't appreciate
No, I
that.
mean, I already have a hard time even wanting to pay a season subscription for like, let's say Fortnite or Call of Duty Battle Pass. I mean, I just don't see the benefits because a lot of the times the items and the cosmetics are shit. They're not that cool, especially for the price that they want with these virtual coins. But even like, let's say you buy an NFT, I feel like it would only work in the realms of, let's say, Battle Royale, because the only way that you're going to bring that NFT cosmetic into the game, it's got to be attached to the video game source, I'm assuming. Like, you couldn't just, like, bring your costume somewhere else. I mean, like, I feel like none of this is new, in my opinion, because I think about, let's say, NBA 2K player. When you used to be able to create your player before the metaverse hype was even a thing, you used to be able to use your mobile device, take pictures of yourself in three different angles, bring it to the game, and they will create facial recognition of yourself and bring it to the game. So why would we even need NFTs if we already have this today?
I don't think we do. Honestly, like just being real blunt about it, I don't think we do. I think it's just a lot of companies are like, oh, there's a ton of money here. Let's jump on this because we're losing money.
Right. I think you really are on to something. And I know, Henrik, I mean, it's wasn't too long ago that, you know, video games meant playing Pong in an arcade or firing up an 8-bit home console to shoot, you know, these blocky space invaders. And today we play on 3D graphics at 4K resolution. Sometimes if you're lucky, maybe like Henrik, who's, I think you're on AK, right? I mean, you are the PC gamer. I know you wish you were right now.
Almost
there. But see, the possibilities are so endless. And now we're slipping on a VR headset, entering a 360-degree virtual world. I mean, is this the next version of the internet, the metaverse?
I don't know. I think there's a lot of possibilities there. I think that specifically VR, though, it's still a little bit inaccessible in terms of price. When it gets a little bit more accessible, maybe we can reevaluate it and say, okay, actually, this is going to be like the next big thing. I think still, though, because of that, it's going to be a little bit gimmicky when you really look at the games that are being made for it. There's not a whole lot of games that really people want to play on VR. Well,
there's a lot of modded VR. You know, like I saw one where there was like literally a Star Wars and a Spider-Man all in the same, you know, virtual world, and I'm like, what am I watching and how do I get my hands on this?
Yeah,
I think that's a fair point. I mean, you know, because I mean I kind of laugh. Obviously, we know Mark Zuckerberg, he is the face of quote unquote Meta, but he's not the only guy innovator that's trying to get into the metaverse. Do you feel like, you know, video games in the metaverse will play a higher role in, let's say, education?
Oh no, definitely. Yeah, the VR is already primed for education, honestly. I mean, it just has to get into schools and be more accessible at that point. But I mean, video games have already been used for education. Prime example I can think off the top of my head is the Minecraft Education Edition. Yeah. I mean, they basically just use that to teach coding, like teamwork, all that sort of stuff. And I think that games really do have a potential for giving a great educational experience that is a change of pace from just sitting in a classroom and, you know, looking at a whiteboard that's being
written right on. I mean, you know, luckily for the kids under 16, they don't have to go through the glory days of having to sneak into your high school library and trying to play the Halo demo on the PC when you got some extra time. But I mean, I think that'd be so cool. I mean, I feel like the first kind of adaption that we've ever brought video game education to, you know, the curriculum of, like, let's say junior high and high school, I think was with typewriting classes. And I think, you know, later on we'll be able to even explore that venture even further. And you know, Henrik, yeah, I got a couple minutes with you still left, and I was reading some breaking news this morning that Xbox is actually allowing now Twitch to be able to stream via the console. So Microsoft ended up trying to start their own streaming service called Mixer. It ultimately failed. They ended it. What do you see the potential for this move?
So I think that's going to basically give a lot of gamers who want to stream more access to streaming, especially now when there's a global chip shortage and it's kind of hard to get an actual gaming computer built. Being able to just stream directly from your console, that's actually, I think that's great. That's a great move on Microsoft's part, because you're basically giving a bunch of people the tools to say, hey, I already have this console. I don't necessarily need to buy a whole gaming computer.
Yeah, right.
I can just stream from my console.
And I think that's such a great point. And we're starting to actually see, I said this like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, mind you. And I was kind of letting the listening audience know, I sort of feel like the end of consoles is coming pretty darn soon. I have a feeling that video games are going to actually start showing up on your smart TV. Do you view it that same way?
Yeah, I've been thinking the same way for quite a few years now that like if you look at Game Pass, for example, like Game Pass,
Yeah.
for those who don't know, it's basically you pay Microsoft and you get a subscription like Netflix, but for games, basically. You get a bunch of games in this subscription. You don't have to buy them. As long as you have the subscription, you can play them. It's gonna
Right.
be like that, I think, in the future, where you don't necessarily need to buy a console. You pay for a service, and then the game you can just load up on your TV. It's not even loaded on the TV, it's loaded from the cloud. So you don't have to have
Right.
anything but your TV or a smartphone or whatever, you know?
I think that's such a great point because we obviously saw Google, aka the company's called Alphabet, and they tried to start their own video game console called Stadia. We're also hearing reports that Apple is trying to come up with the concept of their own quote-unquote video game console, but maybe it's going to become more virtual than ever. And I know that you had a great IG reel that where you were talking about the new Steam Deck that drops today. And where do you see that when it comes to the handheld devices? Will this actually outplay, let's say, the Nintendo Switches?
I'm not sure if it'll beat the Nintendo Switch because, you have the name brand of Nintendo, really, which is known by so many people. But what I do think the Steam Deck really has going for it is the price. Comparing the performance of the Steam Deck to like some other handheld PCs, which are out there, the price is like half. So even sometimes a third if you go for like the base model one. And I think the accessibility of that is really what's going to change the landscape of handheld gaming because so many people will be able to actually afford it and get it in their hands, barring any chip shortages,
Right. But
so
what
people will
ends
be
up
able to
happening to the
play.
people who don't have Wi-Fi, don't have the internet? Are you going to be able to still play games? Because, I mean, the last I recall, I mean, you don't have a CD disc to put into the Steam Deck, correct?
No, yeah, I mean, it's all based off the Steam service though, which is all digital in the first place. It has been for a long time, all just digital on PC for a lot of platforms.
Okay, yeah.
So there's no longer really like a CD anyways. So I don't think it really make too much of a difference, but it'll definitely be a jump if, like, for example, someone goes from a PlayStation where they have CDs or an Xbox where they have CDs, and then they're like, oh, let's try the Steam Deck. All of us, wait, what about all these games that I already bought? I can't play those? I have to buy them
Right.
again?
Yeah, no, I think that's such a great point, Henrik. I mean, I'm still in the PlayStation 4. I still have zero luck being able to get my hands on a PS5, but bet your ass I can't wait to get my hands on one. But I think that's such a true fact that you're stating is because I can't remember the last time I've actually bought a physical CD. I mean, I'm such a big advocate of being a part of the PS Plus subscription. And like, I don't really care what kind of video game I play. Just keep surprise me every month and I'll play it. I think the days of paying $70 for a video game is definitely jeopardized. And with the Steam Deck dropping, more subscription services based around video games are starting to amplify more and more. Will you see this actually swindling game prices, or will it actually kind of remain the same?
I actually see something more interesting. I see the fact of maybe the prices going up for video games. They already
Oh, no.
have when you really look at it. Like a lot of games used to be $50, $60, and now they're like $70.
I remember the days where they were
So,
like $40 on the PS3, and I started
exactly.
sweating. I'm like, dude, like, there's other things. I got student loans I got to start thinking about. And like, if I put 70 plus dollars invested in, let's say, Elden Ring, which I want to get my hands all over, I just physically can't do it at this time. And then I end up missing out, and then I'm gonna start seeing other people on YouTube, live streaming it, spoiling the game for everybody else. So that's, I mean, I think you're on to it, but my God, please, if we go into the subscription service, don't rip us off. Don't do that to us. And please, please do not. But Henrik, I can't express enough how excited I am to have you a part of the CCS family. And we're gonna tell you guys right now, we are excited for you all to hear us out first because Henrik and I, we're working on the early stages of developing our own live stream video game show. And I'll kind of start it off. I'll kind of give a little insight to the CCS family. What we're really trying to do is to is create a social commentary video game talk show. With that being said, I don't know about you, Henrik, but I recognize I'm not the kind of gamer like the rest of these esports streamers are today. I mean, I can give you my fair run on Fall Guys, okay? I can definitely get that crown, no problem. But, I mean, I realize that I'm not, you know, in that X game caliber, but we've always wanted to talk about the history of the game, how it was developed, why we love these kind of gaming so much, and then even do first look on those kind of games, for example, like Elden Ring. And let me throw it to you real quick, because what are you most excited to explore in this new venture?
Honestly, just having some fun, playing some games, talking a little bit like that. That sounds like a good time to me. But at the same time, I think, you know, kind of talking about the history and like all that, that's interesting to me. I love fun facts.
You're right. I think there's like so many fun anecdotes in our favorite game franchises that, you know, if you're not following those, like, let's say, correct YouTube channels, you're never going to figure that out. But we wanted to be a part of this video game phenomenon, which is basically capitalizing on the live stream aspect. And we cannot wait to further explore this. So keep a lookout in the next couple of months as we go ahead and start to do our first live stream. We plan on interviewing some of the top video game developers today and talking about their video games. So keep a lookout for that. And make sure to follow my man, Henrik Rivera, on social media. Where can they follow you so they can catch up on all those video game reports? Portings and your video game live streams?
So I'm on YouTube. My channel is Offhand Plays, Let's Play and Chill. I'm also on Instagram and Twitter, and on those I post some personal posts, but also just like teaser clips of what I'm doing on that YouTube channel and just having some fun playing games, chilling out.
Hey, you know, that's what it's all about. Video games are fun. They're therapeutic. You get the drill, fam. Thank you again, Henrik Rivera, for joining the Chris Collins Show Millennial Talk Show.
Thank you.
Peace. What's good? This is Strike a Chord, where if you actually physically or digitally pick up that record, you're going to know these tracks. And Marissa and I, we're going to do something a little bit different today on Strike a Chord because we have all these music topics that we've been just dying to discuss. So let's get right on into it. Legendary singer-songwriter David Crosby has recently shared a depressing piece of advice for young musicians, saying they should stop doing it altogether. When David Crosby was asked by Stereo Gum about what he would tell younger artists about how to navigate the biggest corporations in music such as Spotify, he said, quote, "Don't become a musician. You know how shitty it is for me to say that? You know how much I don't want to say that? Some bright-eyed young kid who has talent, I don't want to say that to them. And it is the truth, and I don't hold any hope for it at all." And sadly, Marissa, I think David Crosby is right on a level. I mean, touring bands, you know, it's not a viable career anymore.
No, he's wrong.
Okay, let's see. Well, you already want to jump on it. What's your take?
Oh, yeah. No, I think he's wrong. I think, look, is the industry itself a rat race, wrong, broken? I mean, you even have Ye right now try and drop his own album on a whole nother platform. Didn't work, right?
Well, he's doing the stem player. That's an actual
stem player.
And no one could do that, yet, though.
But I'm saying, but you see, so he's even thinking outside the box. How do we make it work?
But advice, doesn't that prove David Crosby's point?
No, the point, but the advice saying, don't pick it up. Look, if you're doing music, you're doing it because you have to do, there's something inside of you that is craving it, just like me as an artist, okay? Look, would the money be amazing? Would it be there? That would be awesome. And there's a better level playing field. When we had Soren on here before, he talked about this. He wishes he could do something else, but he can't because it's in his blood. So telling an artist, hey, go against that ingrained, what you have to do because you're not going to make all that money. I think that's BS. And I think that's bad.
Well, no, I totally disagree with you. I think what David Crosby is trying to get at is if you just think the music revenue itself is going to make you amplify as an artist, that's just not the case anymore in 2022. What I'm trying to get at is I think musicians almost certainly have to utilize the power of social media, like past guests like Punk Rock Factory and just like how you said Soren. I think how they utilize the social media game by getting their face out there, I think is such a huge essential because there's a lot of kick-ass artists today.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're giving advice that makes sense and works. You know what you're not saying? Hey, kids, don't go pursue your passion.
That's true, too. That's true, too.
Okay, you again. What kind of advice is that?
That's true. I mean, it's an ugly statement, but then again, it's David Crosby, and he's, you know, his hair starting to fall out. But then again, it's like, you know, if you guys want to be successful, it's just like in the world of talk radio, you've seen a lot more vodcast. It's a new term that's being circulated around the realms of podcasts. They're called video on air productions. People, the youth, they want to put a face to that voice. Just the same applies to every musician out there. So if you're not utilizing those tools, it's going to be a tough road. And we're going to get more into that when it comes to more music business news. But for now, I just referenced them. They're such a kick-ass band. They did this amazing cover of Disney's brand new Pixar film, Encanto. And this song's called We Don't Talk About Bruno, live on the Chris Collins Show, Millennial Talk Show.
We don't talk about Bruno, no, no, no. We don't talk about Bruno.
But it was my wedding day.
It was our wedding day.
We were getting ready, and there wasn't a cloud in the sky.
No clouds allowed in the sky.
Bruno walks in with a mischievous grin.
Stutter and a stumbling, I could always hear him sort of muttering and mumbling. I associate him with the sound of falling sand. It's a heavy lift with a gift so humbling. Always left a Bella and the family fumbling, grappling with the prophecies they couldn't understand. Do you understand? A 7-foot frame rats along his back. When he calls your name, it all fades to black. Yeah, he sees your dreams and feasts on your screams. We don't talk about Bruno, no, no, no. We don't talk about Bruno. He told me my fish would die the next day, dead. He told me I'd grow a gut, and just like he said,
he said that all my hair would disappear. Now look at my head.
Your fate is still and your prophecy is red.
He told me that the life of my dreams will be promised to some.
Jay Mayano's on his way.
He told me that the man of my dreams would be just out of reach. Betrothed to another.
He's like a hero.
I want every sound out of you.
I can hear him now.
Oh, Bruno. Yeah, about that Bruno. I really need to know about Bruno. Give me the truth and the whole truth, Bruno.
Here's a
That's what's good. That is Punk Rock Factory. And you can check out our interview with them. It's on our YouTube channel right now or wherever you listen to podcasts. And that is their amazing cover of Pixar's film Encanto. And this track's called We Don't Talk About Bruno, if you didn't figure that out already. But hey, this is Strike a Chord, where if you physically or digitally pick up that record, you're going to know these tracks. And we're doing something a little bit different today because we're going to be discussing music topics that Marissa and I have been dying to discuss. So another week, another big money acquisition fund in music emerges, but this one comes with some interesting twists. So financial giant BlackRock, not to be confused with Hypnosis Song Fund's backing Blackstone, has co-invested with Warner Music Group in a new $750 million fund to acquire stakes in music copyrights. And there is no way of saying this lightly. Across its global portfolio, BlackRock currently has over $10 trillion with a T of assets under management. And the biggest single catalog music acquisitions in recent times, though, have come from the big three major music companies. That are Universal Music Group, Sony Music Group, and Warner Music Group. And I feel the problem today in the music industry is many artists, both major, minor, and let's say indie, have learned, or let's say never learned, Marissa, how a record royalties are computed, what a copyright is, how music publishing works. I mean,
do you know what's crazy? Dave Grohl can maybe give that information out. Sorry.
Well, but how does Dave Grohl apply to this? I'm kind of confused.
Dave Grohl,
on that
I'm sorry. I mean, from earlier.
David Crosby. David Crosby.
My bad. Love Dave Grohl. Take that back. David Crosby.
Yeah, I know, right?
Getting that information.
Right. No, I just find it so wild because I know earlier this month, Universal Music Group acquired Sting's song catalog, which was worth $300 million. Last year, Sony Music Group has Bruce Springsteen's masters and publishing catalogs. They bought that for $550 million. And also, we got to mention Warner Music Group. They just acquired the entire David Bowie song catalog for around $250 million. Where is this money coming from? How can we not pay these artists? When you see these big moves, that's why I get so skeptical, and that's why don't rely on these major corporations to get you that revenue. You got to think outside the box. You got to use the power of social media. Get your face out there, because just by seeing these kind of moves alone, I don't have too much faith happening right about now. But we got an amazing track from the one and only boys from Authority Zero. We interviewed drummer Chris Daly, not once, but twice. He's such an amazing cat. We love this track so much, and you guys should enjoy it. They dropped this music video about 2 months ago. The song's called Ollie Ollie Oxen Free, live on The Chris Collins Show.
We'll be right back.
Oh, you gotta love it. That is Authority Zero, and that is their music video, Ollie Ollie Oxen Free. And I got so much love for these boys. Even before I did this radio show, I'll just mention this real quickly. I was so fortunate enough to be able to shoot their album premiere video for Broadcasting to the Nations, and that's what opened up such an amazing relationship with Chris Daly. And, you know, they've been such cool guys ever since, and I'm so in awe of them. Every album is so kick-ass, so support them. And, you know, Merce and I were doing something a little bit different today on Strike a Chord, where if you physically or digitally pick up that record, you're going to know these tracks. And we got some music topics we are dying to discuss, so let's get right on into it. Because Foo Fighters, they got a busy day today. You know, their new movie just dropped, Studio 666. But we're not going to be discussing that. We're going to be discussing something else, because Foo Fighters frontman Dave Grohl argues with a group of autograph seekers, saying he will no longer grant autograph requests unless it is for charitable events. So apparently, a couple months ago, a video is going viral of Dave Grohl getting into a bit of an argument with an autograph hounds on the street discussing his new concept. And we've obtained this clip, so check it out for yourself.
Oh, it's coming up right now.
But yeah, you guys got to see it. It's really
cool. Yeah, it's really good. All right, here it comes right now. Got to have it for the context. Dun, dun,
dun. From Detroit, Dave.
One thing.
I'm going to say it one more time.
I know, yeah. But one thing.
I'm going to say it one more time.
May I have a selfie?
I stopped signing shit unless it's for charity. Okay?
Can you donate something? Can you donate?
You said that in New York and then signed in D.C. the next day.
That's it.
Can you write a name on it, please?
You can write my son's name on it. Please.
Here's the other thing. See ya.
Come on, Dave, please.
I love Dave Grohl just peels the hell out. And the thing is that people have to realize this is the same concept that Paul McCartney, who they kind of are buddy buddies nowadays, he does the same thing. He doesn't sign autographs anymore because he's so afraid of these eBay, you know, hounders, or, you know, you go on the Facebook marketplace.
And it wasn't like there was a kid there saying, hey, you're my biggest fan. Those were autograph hounders.
Those definitely were. And it looks like he's outside of a restaurant, which I have a major problem with. I mean, the guy is just trying to live his life. And, you know, it's not like he's saying he won't take pictures for his fans. But if you don't understand Dave Grohl's concept, I mean, you know, that's unfortunate. I mean, that being said, he doesn't have to do anything for nobody. And I kind of feel like a picture speaks a thousand words, and autographs might be a little outdated. I mean, personally, I like an autograph, but that's not the time and place to be doing that with Dave Grohl. And I think he's got such a great point. And why not highlight one of the amazing artists that have joined us for our third installment of Off the Fret? More music talk. I know Marissa was hounding me last week. She says, you keep playing the same music video. Well, guys, I've heard from you. I've heard from Marissa Pitts. We are switching it up. This is an amazing music video from them. And this song's called South Ozone, live on the Chris College Show, Millennial Talk Show.
Hand-me-downs and throwaways, dirty kicks and layaway. A single mom struggling to keep her kids from suffering. 100-226, JHS, and all the friends who understood the need to look ahead. Shout it out, shout it out! Public schools on a boulevard gave me spine. Regardless of the consequence, because we are all we have. So be the person you needed when you were young. A dad who drank and barely spoke,
that is the Phoenix Within, and that is their track South Ozone. And you can check out our third installment of Off the Fret, More Music Talk with the Phoenix Within. It is out now on our YouTube channel or wherever you listen to podcasts. And stick around. We got more left on the Chris Collins Show, Millennial Talk Show. And, you know, one last time, we want to give a huge shout out to our brand new kick-ass CCS video game contributor, Henrik Rivera. You better go ahead and check him out. Check us out everywhere, because he's going to be dropping weekly new gaming ideas, gaming tips, gaming news, you name it. He's got it. He's our man. And also, Marissa, I think we have a guest announcement. Should we share it? Should we share it now?
Who is it? I guess so.
I mean, I am beyond stoked. I mean, we just wrapped up our What's Good. You know, I was so touched by this story and the fact that we got the man, the myth, the legend himself to be joining us next week on the Chris Collins Show, Millennial Talk Show, on Just Talking, is Zacharias. He is the creative genius and designer of iHarp. That is the first musical instrument that allows people with disabilities to learn and play using their eyes or with head movements. It's so freaking cool. You guys are in for a treat. Also, check out our third installment of Off the Fret, more music talk with Queens, New York rock band, The Phoenix Within. And if you like what you're listening to, become a member today. Go to thechriscollinsshow.com and get that free CCS t-shirt. And for now, enjoy the weekend, fam. Listen to some good music. Stay away from the TVs. Just focus on you and things will be groovy, baby. See you then. Peace. The Chris Collins Show presents Music Storm 2021, hosted by Chris Collins and Marissa Pitts, featuring Tiana Kutcher, Some Daggers Wear Red, Desmond Walker, Saturn Till June, Music loud, driving fast. YT Will,
it feels good to be the bad guy. Walk these shoes, you'll see why. Look at things from both sides, ain't nothing like the
EC Main.
One thug, Lord, show a little mercy on one thug.
The Phoenix Within.
There's more weight in my words than you give me.
Chloe Wilder. Jonas and I.
It's been brightening up tonight. The Aurora Dance.
Came.
The south, run that in my mouth.
An Animal Son.
So tell me how you see reasons to carry on.
Music Storm 2021, available on YouTube Live. Peace. Our brand new podcast, Off the Fret.
I love it. It's more time to chat.
Hello.
You look so jazzy.
I love your outfit.
How far would you go to start playing live music again?
This slaps harder than my ex when she got her stimulus check. So, are you here to bring the sexual healing with your music? Oh, everything is everything, and I guarantee you're going to hear this song in the future. I love the flow, man. Politically charged album. So, if you get easily offended, this might not be the album for you. Brand new podcast, Off the Fret.
So excited.
Has Kim Kardashian accidentally sent you a coochie shot?
Do you want to stay there? It's completely your choice. Or you want to...
I feel you. And you know what? I love it. Off the Fret. More music talk. Peace. What's good? I'm Chris from the Chris Collins Show, Millennial Talk Show. The Phoenix Within, a rock project hailing from Queens, New York, released their long-awaited full-length album, Overdue, joins Off the Fret. More music talk.